This is the Love Foco Show.
Here in Fort Collins, it was easy for me to envision what was needed or what I thought was needed. I don't know everything, but I said the first objective is to create. We always say these safe, brave spaces, but for some folks in this community, they don't understand what that is. Even when we think we're not causing harm on other folks, we don't know what they're experiencing based on sometimes our ignorance. And ignorance is not always something that you're doing to harm someone. You can just not know.
Welcome to the Love Foco Show. Our podcast highlights the incredible people who make Fort Collins the place we're proud to call home. Each week, your host, Jeff Faust, sits down with local leaders, community champions, and changemakers to share their stories, what they love about our city, and how they're helping it thrive. So whether you're out on the trail, at a brewery, or walking through Old Town, thanks for tuning in.
Hey everyone, today I am sitting down with Jamal Skinner from the Cultural Enrichment Center of Fort Collins. Jamal's story is amazing. It dates back to some time growing up on Long Island in New York and transitioning out here to Fort Collins, Northern Colorado, making this place a home, not only for himself, but creating hospitable environments for all kinds of different folks in our community, particularly doing some great work with African-American teenagers in and around Fort Collins. I loved this conversation with Jamal. I learned a lot. He shared honestly and transparently about where our city can grow, how we can improve. And I hope you love this conversation as much as I did. So with that, let's just go ahead and jump in and introduce Jamal to you today. Well, Jamal, thank you so much for giving me your afternoon. I appreciate you being here in the Love Foco Resource Center and looking forward to this conversation. And we were introduced to each other from someone else that I've interviewed, Gloria Kapp from La Familia. And you know, I've come to learn that if she's going to recommend something, I'm going to knock on those doors. And so I'm grateful that you are here with us and looking forward to hearing about how you're serving our city and loving, you know, our city one life at a time. But I want to start our conversation the way I start every conversation on this podcast. What is your Fort Collins origin story? Did you grow up here? Did you move here? When did that happen? And what has all of that been like?
First, I say it's a pleasure to be here to talk with you. And Gloria is a wonderful person to recommend me. My origin story in Fort Collins, Colorado, starts in the fall of 1996. I'm a New Yorker, born and raised in New York. I moved here to Colorado when I was young. And the reason, because most people ask, was to play professional soccer. That did not go the way I wanted it to, but I did not want to move again. I was at a transition point in my life. Not only was I playing soccer, I was also doing investment banking work in New York, and I needed the mental space to get away from what that drive for money was all about. Yeah. And so I picked a place that was the exact opposite of it and ended up here in Fort Collins.
I have so many questions already because, I mean, you must be like a super high achieving guy. If you were in the financing bank world in New York and you were pursuing professional soccer, you were used to accomplishing things and setting high goals and hitting them. So you must have some kind of high capacity to just pull some of this stuff off.
I do. I think it was just, I don't want to put myself in some category that, you know, I'm something special because I'm not. I think we're all special, but and I know that's not what you're saying.
Yeah.
It's just not every day that I interview a
financial banker from New York who could have also played soccer professionally. You know,
yeah, like, it was also something that I was watching one of my older brothers doing. I guess that's part of my story too. I'm the baby of nine children.
Yeah.
So it was a drive that was implemented by my family. But I think being the youngest, I was always trying to keep up with everyone else that I grew up faster in certain things than most of my siblings. I took things on quickly. Soccer was a love something I fell in love with early. It got me to college. I went to Howard University. I left after 2 years to play professional soccer. So it was always a part of my life, but the finance thing was, it's really interesting. I was trying to use it as a means to an end.
Yeah.
My desire was, I said, I could give my soul to it for 6 years. And I wanted to open a preschool. It was really my goal. I wanted to find a remote place, 2 acres, open a preschool that was really focused on art and music. And that would have been good enough for me for the rest of my life, like to live on the space and do that.
I love this so much. Jamal, I'm such a well-rounded guy. I mean, I did not expect us to start the conversation with financial banking and professional soccer and then get added to that music, art, and preschool.
Yeah.
And I mean, you're just a man of many talents, really, is what I'm learning.
I've tried, but my mom worked for over 40 years in daycare sort of work, and I watched her in her work. And I was always around it, and obviously being the youngest, I had nieces and nephews, you know, starting at the age of like 12. So yep. I was always in that space. My family, come from a big family, even cousins, so we were always around each other. And that thing made me have this need, I guess, for providing space for others, and mainly young people.
Yeah.
Even when I didn't want to do it or wasn't doing it, it was always in my mind, in my heart. And then I moved to Colorado, like I said, in 96. I lived in Denver for 2 months. I was doing a really weird sales job there. And I moved out with a good...
Were you like 20?
I was 24, 25.
Yeah. Then. Yeah. I mean, that is the time of our lives that we have weird jobs.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I feel like every 20 something needs to have something that was just a bit odd and didn't work out.
And it seems odd now, but it was revolutionary then, because I was working for a company that was selling credit card machines to small businesses. To allow them to take credit cards.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it seems in this world now it's everywhere, but in 96 it wasn't. And I moved out of New York with a good friend of mine I went to high school with, and he just was not a sales guy. So after like 2 months, you know, they pulled me in the office and they were like, hey, we really want to keep you, want to promote you.
Yeah.
You're great at this. You know, I'd come from a world of hard sales, and your friend is just not producing.
We want to keep you and cut your friend.
And we moved out together. And so, you know, we were living, his mom lived in sort of South Denver. Not really South Denver. She's like in Cherry Creek area.
Okay.
And our objective was to get our own place, you know, and I didn't have the soccer thing until the spring. And so I was like, let's go up to Fort Collins and visit a friend for the weekend. And we came up here and never really technically left. It was just running into the right people, found a house to move into, and I stayed here for about four years, you know, post my decision to not play with the Rapids. They wanted me to play a year underneath that with their old professional team, the Colorado Foxes. And
okay.
That was a quick conversation for me. I told them I wasn't going to go backwards to go forward ever again. So I stayed to figure out, really, it was about a life journey, you know. Yet I don't know if it was a crossroads thing for me, but it was just figuring out what I really wanted to focus myself on. And music had always been a part of my life. So a couple of us formed a band here in Fort Collins. We played till like 2000. After 2000, we all were going to move out to LA, you know, this big idea of playing music.
Yeah, of course.
And we all kind of split up. And I'm happy with the keyboard player in our band was getting his degree in classical piano and jazz at UNC Greeley. And I was like, dude, don't come. Do the thing you want to do.
Yeah.
He ended up getting a PhD in both and playing and loves it. We still talk. And
that's amazing.
I'm happy for him.
Yeah.
So we all kind of split up. And then I ended up moving to Las Vegas, again, another sales job sort of work. Did 6 years of that in Sin City and knew that place, I don't have any vices, but that place was just eating me internally, and I wanted to play.
It's a different kind of atmosphere, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm not.
Even if you're not plugged into all the different things that it has to offer, it's just there.
It's just there. Yeah, it's around you, just literally buzzing. And so I came back here in the year of 2006.
Okay. Now, I've talked with so many people who like were here for a bit and left and somehow found their way back here again, you know?
I think Fort Collins does that.
Yeah.
I think it does. I think there's...
Is it the pace of life that's attractive? Is it relationships that grow strong and last? What do you...
I think it's both. I think, you know, I always say Fort Collins is a 4 degrees of separation instead of 6.
Yeah.
So as a result, it's a... connections people make, I think, quickly.
Yep.
Which is great. And then I think a lot of people have that over the years that I've talked to, after like a 4 years, 5 years, I start getting an itch to get out because it becomes, for some, it seems small.
Yep. You know, especially if you come from like New York.
Yeah.
Right. And New York is, I mean, I moved here from Kansas City. That's part of our story. But even Kansas City is like a fifth of the size of New York.
Yeah. And I'm honest, like people always, when they hear New York, everyone thinks New York City, you know, New York, big place.
Huge.
I grew up in a really small, I would call it small, but I grew up in Long Island. So okay. I grew up, it was very strange. I guess we're just having a conversation. I'll tell you, it was very strange dynamic, of living in the projects, but surrounded by extremely affluent people.
That's Long Island.
Particularly the town I grew up in.
Okay.
Long Island has that. It's, you know, we talked earlier, before we even started this podcast, this general conversation about segregated neighborhoods. New York is full of it. You know what I mean? Every city is, I think, for the most part. You have your Italian section, you have your old Polish sections, you have your Greek towns like they have in certain areas. You have black neighborhoods, you have your Latinx neighborhoods. Some intersect in interweave and crossover, but they exist. Long Island is built on an old history of real segregation. You know what I mean? So the housing projects I grew up in this small town, which was a peninsula, you know, so it was 3/4 surrounded by water.
Yep.
I would say even 3/4 of that peninsula was private beach.
Yeah.
You know,
well, like, that's what people don't always realize. I mean, at least it was from growing up in the Midwest, I didn't even, you can read about it in a book. It's one thing. You experience it in a city. It's a whole nother thing. But just because a law is passed, for instance, doesn't mean that like the generational patterns automatically go away when a law is passed.
Yeah. It's
right. Like there's still a bleeding of that injustice or that segregation or economic disparity, whatever, you know, there's a whole category of things that we can list there. It has a way of bleeding into the fabric that doesn't just get eliminated if a law is passed.
No, and it even laws don't necessarily disregard policy.
Yeah.
Policies that get put in place intentionally that run underneath a grandiose law.
Yeah.
For instance, redlining. You know, when people talk about Levittown, Long Island is the hub or epitome of what redlining is in the creation of suburbs that we see across America. That's 20 minutes from where I grew up.
Okay.
So all the GI Bill stuff that was never offered to black soldiers coming home from war, they were denied opportunities to purchase homes.
Yeah.
In Levittown, Long Island.
Yep.
That was the birthplace of the creation of suburb idea, GI Bill loans, right there where I know my own family members didn't reap the benefits. So some of those homes were bought as low as no money down because some of them didn't even have the money. And, you know, it was offers that way. You know, those homes now are well... any range between 900,000 to 1.5.
That's generational wealth.
That's huge.
Opportunity to take a HELOC out. Opportunity you can leverage that asset for educational purposes or whatever.
Oh,
I was just talking with Kristen Candela, who runs Habitat for Humanity here in Fort Collins, and we had this great conversation about how home ownership is one of the premier ways to build asset wealth.
Of course,
generationally.
Of course,
Because those things get passed down.
Yes.
And all the different ways that even before the house is totally paid off, you can leverage for the future.
Absolutely.
For your children and your grandchildren. And
absolutely.
That has a way of impacting not just one person, but multiple generations.
Yeah. Families.
Families. Yeah.
Plural. You know, so
you grew up around all of that.
And I'm talking like super affluent folks is where I grew up. Yeah. For instance, maybe a 12-minute walk from my apartment growing up right now to a certain village is what it's called, Sands Point, is where Chris Rock lives.
Okay.
So we're talking that kind of money.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's what I grew up around. So understanding that the dichotomy of going to school, and it was predominantly white school from K through 12, but going home to Black folks and Latinx folks.
Yeah.
There's a lot to be learned there early.
What kinds of things stand out to you from your upbringing there? Because it's almost like patterns of behavior are almost different in those different places.
Yes. To answer that, yes. I never did what, because the patterns sometimes can become what they call code switching in order for folks to exist. I never had that. I'm thankful. I've always had this sort of activist, revolutionary, resistance thing in me. And I've told this story, I don't know, probably a million times, but I know that it changed. It was one of the first moments in my life that it sounds wild to be in third grade, that it changed my life trajectory. Just tension with a teacher that I knew had these sort of racist, prejudiced tendencies in her. I could recognize it.
Yeah.
And we battled. And it set me on a mission in my own mind from that moment, third grader. I was a baby, that I would never allow anything like that to determine how I navigate and function in this world. And so that stayed with me my entire...
That's a big thing for a third grader to be confronted with and also like embrace as part of... this is like part of who I am. Mm-hmm. This is part of how I am going to lead in this world.
And that's what it became. That's the truth. And I had great support for it. Not just at home. My church... At that time, there was some elder women, man, ooh, beautiful women. You know, they kept me and a certain group of young men, you know, we'd get a little bit off and they'd sort of lean us back into where we needed to be.
Well, not only directly to you, but probably behind the scenes praying like crazy.
Everything.
Because these churches that are filled with these elders who are just spiritually mature and rich, they just pray until things change.
Yep.
I mean, that's amazing.
That's who I grew up underneath. And it's interesting. Two of the three friends that I'm still that close to are on my board.
Yeah.
That grew up underneath the same thing.
Yeah.
So they know why I'm doing what I'm doing,
right?
Even here in Fort Collins.
Well, it's fascinating to me because I get to have a lot of conversations like this with different people around all kinds of different things. But it doesn't surprise me that there are some childhood memories that kind of position your heart in a particular kind of way. Mm-hmm. What's so interesting to me, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. What's so interesting to me is I could have a conversation like this with someone else. Maybe not the exact same situation you went through, but something that rhymes with it or something that's similar, and they can end up in different space.
Mm-hmm. Easy.
I heard some ingredients of like community and some mentorship kind of pouring into you and care, almost creating an atmosphere for you to continue to grow and be challenged. But what are some of the other things that helped you take that moment in third grade that could have been derailing and actually turned it into some rails that you ran on and have actually created a wake behind you and in its place?
I think a couple, it's going to sound, a piece of it is being competitive.
Yeah.
I know that looking back, I was extremely competitive kid.
Yeah. You know? Just like, dang on, this is not going to take me down. Like, I'm going to keep moving forward.
I almost wanted it.
Yep.
As strange as that sounds. And it was to prove things to myself as well as those around me. The whole point of that classroom was I wasn't being afforded the opportunity to participate. And like in that time, they had like different levels of, I guess, study within the class. Like you had your highest level math, highest level reading, writing, all those things. And then you had like mid-level and then, you know, so it's really strange that we used to do it that way. And so kids were sectioned off in class based on that, the amount of homework that they would do, or they would be given certain work that they could handle. And this teacher just would not see that I could handle all of it.
Yep.
And I'd never had that prior, you know? So it was a battle. And I remember, and I've told this story, my mom said, find someone in the classroom who's doing the highest level in both. You do that homework and your homework. Cool, mom, I got you.
Yeah.
So I did both. Lady was still grading it, but would not move me up. It was just this thing she had. And we had our moment. And I remember that day I got thrown out of class. The whole, long story short, I ended up in what they called a ELP, the Accelerated Learning Program. So half the day I got to go where there was supposedly the super smart kids for the day. So it was like, I won.
Yeah.
I won, you know, and that's what it was about. Like, you're not ever going to take this thing from me that is innately in me. I know it is, but also that I have a drive to want.
Yep.
And so that has, it's been a barrier at certain points in my life, but it's also been a driving force for things I know and doors I've opened up, because I'm just straightforward and honest about what I want and why I think it should be given.
It's interesting, isn't it? Like how sometimes these core strengths as a, you know, I was telling you before the podcast started, my day job, I pastor town. So faith is obviously just a really big part of who I am and how I lead. And I like to think God has wired us in certain ways and even deposited us into us some giftings that will carry on in our life for years to come. How those things can be such a blessing, and at times either because of our like needing to mature or because other people just can't handle it, they could also be overplayed strengths in a time or in a season. Mm-hmm. But at the core of what it is inside of you, like it's been a blessing for you. And I have to imagine that's impacted other people around you as well.
I think so in many different ways. There's a lot that comes with that. I've had a lot of men and women, probably 2 years ago is when I realized the impact. You know, we had I think it was 3 years ago, they started doing a community reunion in the apartment complex where I grew up. And I went 2 years ago and I took my son, he's 15, he was 13 then. And him getting to hear all the stories about me, and there was a lot of friction with people trying to determine how someone's supposed to live, act, whatever it is within the neighborhoods, you get that. But seeing the maturity now and people saying, hey, man, I see the work you're doing and it's beautiful. And I'm watching from afar. And we always knew that was you. Mm. That was you. So, yeah, it took me a long time to come back, I think, to who I am and what, it sounds weird, I always tell people, what I know I owe on this earth.
Yep.
Before I'm gone.
I feel like that to me, I mean, we're just getting to know each other. So I know, you know, it's hard for me to maybe recognize something and speak it into your life in such a short amount of time. But that just sounds to me like what leaders talk about. You know, like there is just a weight. There is even maybe a burden to my skill set, my gift set, the DNA I've been given, the nature of who I am, what I've seen, what I've been exposed to, what I've battled through on the other side. And therefore, I'm going to take those things. And there's like a responsibility then to leverage that for others. I just, that's just like leader speak to me.
Yeah. I don't know if you have going to lead into what I do here.
Yeah, we got to get there. But this is a good segue
into it. My mother, watching my mother, who was a servant to everyone, was hard, and there was a lot of wisdom and gifts that I would see. So, and it was, God almighty, it was 2019. Like 7 years, my mom battled Alzheimer's dementia, bad, like bad. The last 3 years were horrible. So I was flying back from here, Fort Collins to New York. I would try to get home like 3 or 4 times a year, at least like 5, 6 days. One of my older brothers, so that's who I was talking to outside before I came in, why I was late, took care of my mom for 5 years, 24/7. But he did it for 7 years. My mom's passing was the moment for me, you know, where the shift kind of needed to happen.
That was in 2019?
Yeah.
So like the heart of COVID.
Yeah. She was right before. So she was the summer before we swung around into 2020, I think, was the heart.
Okay.
So thank goodness. I am thankful that my brother didn't have to deal with that, you know, and everything. Long story short, my mom did really incredible things in secret for folks. You know, giving clothing, young girls who were having kids early, helping always. But never, no one would ever know. Only a select few knew.
Yep.
When I went back to New York, that funeral, I came back. One of my closest friends growing up, he lives in Colorado Springs. Like, we are brothers. You know, we spent sleeping in the same pullout couch, you know, overnight hangouts. And it was mostly at my apartment. His mom was a single mom. But he was like my brother, you know what I mean? And it's strange, we're both here in Colorado. He moved here like 2 years before I did.
Yeah.
So it's great having, it's like family. So, you know, his mother was my Sunday school teacher, you know, so it's like his mother and my dad went to the same high school. I don't know if there's anybody closer to me than him, besides my own family. And it was like a year of the week anniversary of my mom's death. It was, now we're in the midst of COVID 2020. I think it was June. And his mom passed. Right. And we knew it was coming. So, you know, we'd always talk about it. So I drove down to Colorado Springs to help him start to support. Also, he had to start packing up his mom's apartment. You know, they get you in, get you out. 30 days, you're going to get out. You know, it's like the woman just passed and it's like, got to get her stuff out. You know, that's the world we live in. So I was down there and it was emotional for both of us. You know, he came up. When my mom passed, we had good cries together. Same thing going down there. So I'm driving back, and I think I've told the story a million times, but it's like the realest reason I am here in Fort Collins. I'm driving back. I didn't go the normal I-25 way because it was like Castle Rock was always backed up. He's like, oh, you could take the scenic route around that. I'd never done it in all the years I'd been here. And I pulled over one of these little scenic overlook spots and I cried like a baby. You know, the rest of the drive, it was like both women in my ears. Jamal, you got to do more where you are. That was it.
Wow.
I literally walked in my door in Fort Collins.
Yeah.
I didn't take my luggage out. Nothing out of the car. I got on my couch. I got on social media, on Facebook, and I had 2 spaces. I was never thinking about doing any nonprofit work, nothing.
Yeah.
And I don't want to bring this part into the story. I'd been playing music with a band for 15 years, just traveling the country, singing reggae music.
Yeah.
It was fine. My life was simple. I didn't need any more. Yeah. I was good. I had my job, just living my life. And I got on the couch and I had these 2 spaces in the basement of this building on Linden Street here in Fort Collins. And I was thinking about, I had friends that might want to do a little chiropractic work on one side, and a friend who's going to have a barbershop. I was like, cool, I'll take the rent. I'm going to make a little extra $500-$600 a month and continue doing what I'm doing. Right. And I said, I'm going to open an after school program for Black kids here in Fort Collins.
Yeah.
And I'm going to take that small space and I'm going to do it. I put it on Facebook, put it out in the world. Like, it was just at that moment, like, that's what you do.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. And yeah, it was crazy because it was 2 weeks later. I met with a gentleman here who had, it has a nonprofit still, Trees Water People, Sebastian, good dude. And I asked him, I came to him with humility. I said, I don't have any idea how to get this really going. I need you to tell me everything you know.
Yeah.
We sat in City Park for 2 hours and he just
downloaded.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I think it was a couple of days later, I met with his attorney, started the 501c3 process. And that September, I was up and running. I'll never forget them and I love them for it. I didn't even have the status yet. And it was that August. So things happened in a month and a half.
Like, yeah, just going. Quick.
School was starting in August. I had got some computers donated. You know, some kids were still doing hybrid. So I knew I had to offer that possibility for kids who were doing full-time online. Music City Hot Chicken gave me my first large check, you know, then,
yeah,
which was insane. They had a full fundraiser day during COVID for me at the store and gave 100% of the proceeds
to me. Wow, that's sweet.
And I was like, I don't have my status. So like, you'll get it.
Yeah.
And I was like, cool. And that September we got it, but I was up and running mid-August.
Yeah.
At a month.
Yeah. That is a quick turn. Anyone who's listening who's started a 501c3 knows that is a quick turn, man. That is a quick turn.
I would tell anyone, don't do it that way.
Yeah.
But I sat in my backyard for 2 weeks and I literally envisioned what it would look like in 4 years. I did. Like, I thought 4 years ahead. I thought about everything I wanted to have in it. I thought about how I wanted my bylaws to look. I thought about the classes, the curriculum, everything.
Yeah.
Like, literally everything. And I didn't sleep. I don't think I really slept for like 2 weeks. Yep. I was just honed in on that thing.
Well, there's that high achievement guy with a little competitive edge, and you sprinkle in some like real purpose and mission behind that, then it's like fuel, man. It's like fuel for your heart, and it can just get you going.
Yeah, that was it. And I am 6 years in. I saw the need because I've lived here long enough.
Yeah. So tell me about that. Obviously, there's a need around, but let's just get real, kind of real practical, but also really clear about what it is you're leading and what it is you're doing. So you said an after school program for Black teens in Fort Collins. What does that look like? What does that mean? How do you kind of create that space, and what are you leaning into these days?
Well, initially, the thought, which is still our mission, was to provide a space for middle school, high school youth who identify with being Black or African American. And that's a tricky thing because we have tons of conversations around identity. And, you know, some of the students I have are biracial or multiracial, and understanding that you can carry many identities. So I just saw a need living here of how many young Black kids exist in this community. I always thought about Jamal, myself, and how I grew up, and what, because I had a community center in my projects, and it was because you asked me, there had to be people and things. That was a major hub and space for me to evolve and grow. And I'll never forget the gentleman, the men there, Mr. Haynes, was one. You know, we had a little library. It was a tiny room, probably the size of that little toy room you have going in with the toys. And most of the kids would come and they're doing whatever they didn't want to do, their homework after school. Mr. Haynes would pull me in there, say, no, I want you in here. And every time you'd hand me different books to read.
He saw something in you.
I just was, that was part of me too, but he wasn't going to allow me to be pulled somewhere else.
Yeah.
So we would have these great conversations. I was the head of the Nassau County and then all of Long Island NAACP Youth Council for like 4 years.
Wow.
So I've always been in this activism thing. To go back to here in Fort Collins, it was easy for me to envision what was needed or what I thought was needed. I don't know everything, but I said the first objective is to create, we always say these safe, brave spaces, but for some folks in this community, they don't understand what that is. Even when we think we're not causing harm on other folks, we don't know what they're experiencing based on sometimes our ignorance. And ignorance is not always something that you're doing to harm someone. You can just not know.
Just not know. Yeah.
Right. And sometimes that's okay. And for me, it's not okay. Because if things are coming from the life experience of these young people, it's not fully accepted based on someone's own ignorance. It's not, that's not an equitable exchange of dialogue or even existence. It can't work. So the space was created first for that and it still exists that way. I know the sense of belonging that the kids feel there. Not because I say it, because they tell me. There's nothing to do with what I say. So everything that's designed there is from things they desire and want. Yeah. I just listen and I tell them my job is to go out sometimes, do the song and dance to get the funding for you to have the things. So we do, right now we have music production classes, video production classes. We do what people want to call STEM or STEAM. Our main focus now is like 3D printing, some digital design, as well as this summer we're going back to running this drone camp. Foco Cafe here in town, those raised beds, I bought them 3 years ago. So we steward those gardens. So it's always about that side of things, the sustainability of food. We've done projects with renewable energy, mainly solar energy. We built a solar greenhouse. My thought always was to give them a buffet.
Yeah. I hear kind of a liberal arts approach there. I mean, there's all kinds of different. You started with some creativity and some music, and so, but then you started throwing in some tech, and you started throwing in some engineering, and now you're talking food, and I mean, there's all kinds of different opportunities.
And the focus and part of it too, my expertise is in Black history.
Yeah.
Period. That is 40 plus years. I'm still a student.
Yeah.
I, if there's something I have an addiction with is reading.
Yeah.
Like I can't stop. I have a serious problem. I joke with people and they know. Like I can't live without it.
Yep.
So I'm constantly in study mode. Like I don't sleep because I'm constantly studying. I don't know if it's good or bad, but it's just me. Mm-hmm. So that piece I give to them, and that is the strength identity piece I know that I had growing up. And I think that, not think, I know. When we're talking about how people navigate, that is the central thing, my compass, my force, my strength that has always kept me in a space of knowing I exist in all spaces, no matter what anyone thinks.
Yep.
I can walk in any space and I know I'm going to take up space respectfully, but I'm going to take up space.
Yep.
Because it's my space as well.
Yeah.
And that is what they're getting. A lot more civic engagement, for sure. They've done the proclamation with the mayor for, recognizing Black History Month. They've done presentations down at City Hall. They have now their little music group. They're performing all around town. I've watched so many, who come in with a lack of connection, build connections in the space. Again, I say it, a sense of belonging that not just there, that they're realizing how they belong in their schools.
Yep.
I mean, Black population in Fort Collins is barely over 2%. Barely, if depending on how you look at it.
Yeah.
But how many of those are teens? We're talking a very small number.
Yeah.
So that was what I decided I felt I could contribute to this city because it was time.
Yeah.
Especially coming out of COVID.
Why do you say especially out of COVID? How did COVID exacerbate some of the...
Just because I think even early we were talking, you were like, you know, KC Mo, right? Kansas City.
Yep.
All these big cities. We talked again about it. We have neighborhoods. Fort Collins is the first city I've ever been to where there is no black neighborhood.
Okay.
And most people don't think that that's a big deal. It is a big deal. Because it's hard to build community when you're so spread out.
Yeah.
Very difficult. Very, very difficult. I can't go knock on someone's door and support or do the things I need to do.
Yeah.
If it's a collective community like that, we're talking subcultures that exist within the bigger culture.
Yeah.
So as a result, you have to create those spaces.
And I think it's hard. I think one of the things that's so interesting about that, man, I got taken to school in when my wife and I were raising our kids in Kansas City. Even in the church world, you know, I've got some friends that pastor in either a multi-ethnic church or a predominantly black church, but they didn't always, like when they were growing up, maybe when they were in college, they were going to a predominantly white church. And conversation with one of my buddies is like, dude, they were just some cultural needs that weren't met in this particular church. And it's not a cultural need that's better or worse. It's just what's the resting posture of my heart. And it just felt like there was always something that wasn't being ministered to. Mm-hmm. And it was really interesting to be friends with this guy and learn from this guy because those are some questions, or maybe even not even questions. They were just some, like, the resting posture of my heart didn't have to deal with some of those same kinds of things because I was always surrounded by my own culture. And so it was good for me to learn. And I probably was ignorant to those things. I tried as best as I could to not stay ignorant of those things. But tell me just a little bit more about that. Cause I think sometimes the moniker that, or like the narrative people say in their minds is, oh, well, we're not segregated. That's ultimately a good thing. But actually what you're saying is, hey man, it is not all cracked out what it's meant to be, because there are some things that, like, I do want there to be some cultural identity that can be celebrated and championed. And when there's not a black community, that's not always, you're not always going to be able to find that space.
Exactly. And the easiest way is for me to even express what I'm listening, when I'm listening to the young kids in our program. We circle up every day that we come in. We talk about the day and what they're experiencing. Fort Collins, and I'll be honest, you know, I've lived here long enough to see Fort Collins in all of what it is. I tell anybody, I think 25 to 30 years is long enough to get some idea. Folks are confused, in my opinion, about what inclusion looks like. Someone may want to include me in something they're doing because they think they're doing this righteous or right thing by including me, and never come to me to ask me how I would like to be included. And that's the best way I can describe that. That's what the feeling is when you walk into spaces and you're the only one. When you're consistently existing like that, it takes a toll on you. Where you might be looking for that thing that just might make you feel secure in yourself and that has some familiarity. And that is as simple as I could see it, you know, because the kids tell me when they come into space, like, I feel like I can be myself here.
Yep.
I don't need to tell anyone that isn't real. Well, if you don't join these things, if you don't come over here, then we can't understand what you're going through. Maybe they need a space to call their own. Maybe they need a space to heal. Maybe they need a space to work those things out without being interfered. And I've had, believe me, I've had, and this is not talk about negative things, but I've had, when I first started the program, I had plenty of emails I received.
Talking about negative things because I don't think everybody always knows these things.
And they'll know names, but, and I'll be honest, they were from religious institutions here in Colorado, in Fort Collins, saying I was creating a separatist program by creating this thing without ever having the humility to understand what it would be like. And I met with a woman from the women's group in that particular church. And like I said, I won't say what the name is. I have no problem having the conversation. And the best way I could say it was I said, have you ever been a part of a women's group or women's program in your church? Because you said that's where you come from. Yes, yes. I said, okay, so as a cis male, if you create this space for women, I would have the understanding that I have no place in trying to suggest how you do it, how you run it, and what the benefits are. I said, I learned that lesson early. I tell those people over and over again. I learned that early from my mother. Yeah. I'll never forget the day. It was in the bottom of my church. And my mom's having a conversation with three elder women, you know, and I think I was 7 or 8 years old. And I come up and say something. My mom said, hold on a minute. And I asked her, she said, hey, she said, ladies, hold on a minute. When women are talking about women things, keep your mouth shut. Cool.
Yeah.
I got that lesson at 8.
Yeah.
I don't need it anymore.
Yeah.
Like, got it, I'm gone.
Yep.
That's in me for the rest of my life. That's not my place.
Yeah.
But somehow, I think folks just can't seem to really understand the necessity of it. That's one of the main things we're working on, and hopefully we get it done this summer. It's been a very unfortunate and bad luck run for these kids finishing this documentary because I don't want to tell the story anymore. And I don't mean it like that. I want them to tell it because it's their story.
Yeah.
I'm someone who was called to do this. And I tell people that like from the bottom of my heart, I was told to do this. So I'm just acting on what I was told to do.
Yep.
You know, and Fort Collins has to come to the realization that no matter how wonderful we think this city is, there's a lot of growth that needs to happen. And it definitely needs to happen in those areas. I'm one of many voices, but I know the reality of having a Black community, a neighborhood, what that changes for young Black kids. For example, you can build, even with chaos, you can build a greater sense of trust and connection. Even if it could be chaotic from that, sometimes beautiful things come. But my example would be like, I would know some young person's mom from seeing her daily that's in my program. I might know her sister. Oh, that's your auntie. And then, oh, that's your cousin. Now we're understanding how we are connected without like one-offs here and there, meetups and some big events where we get together. And then every time Black folks get together in Fort Collins, like, man, we should do this more often. But if it existed, I think a lot of things could get worked out. I think the trust and building of community and some of the kids who feel really isolated would have less of that feeling. So asking a young person who's 7, 8 years old, I go back to my third grade, to be the only Black kid in a classroom, and sometimes 2 of 3 in an entire school, is asking a lot. And everyone's like, well, why does it have to be about race? I'm like, it just is.
Well, there's just, I mean, even the way you're talking about your after school program where kids can come in and just be themselves. Someone was intentional with the space that was created for I don't think people always realize that there is an unforeseen cost that you are consistently paying that maybe I don't have to pay. And you alluded to it, but I think it's worthwhile saying out loud that is a cost that I don't necessarily know about, but it's something that you're navigating emotionally, mentally. It's just energy that you're having to put out to fit in those spaces, even though you have a secure identity. Mm-hmm. Even though you know you walk into a room and you're not going to be less than who you are, you're going to be fully who you are. It's still there's still a price to that.
Yes.
And I guess I just want to look you in the eye and say thank you for bearing part of that, because I have to trust that just like a boat creates a wake in an ocean or a lake or whatever, that some of the waters behind you, not perfectly calm, but maybe a little bit more calm that someone else can ride. And I just appreciate the wake that you've been able to create to a degree. I hear there's still work to be done.
Yeah. I appreciate
but that first person
that.
In create yeah. create some space, and I'm thankful for that.
I don't want to sound like I don't get it, and I appreciate you saying that. I know when I get out of my own way, I step back and I can see,
yeah,
and I smile because I have three students graduating high school this year. One has a almost full ride to CSU. Been accepted to quite a few universities. Not that it's just about that, but I've watched her develop.
Yeah.
I have a young man who came to me 3 years ago. Was it three years ago? When he was a sophomore, when he just started sophomore year, and he said, "Hey," he always wanted to act. When we would have our little improv video production, he loved it. He shined, right? And other than that, very quiet, introverted kid. Been through a lot. Mm-hmm. Lot. And he came to me, he's like, "Do you think I should like join a theater program at my school and whatever? Do you think I'm good enough?" I said, "Absolutely you are." And I knew, and I wasn't just like BSing him. I was being sincere.
Yeah, yeah.
And I said, "One day I'm gonna see you on a big screen." He's like, "You think so?" I said, "I know so. Cause I see it. It's clear."
Yep.
Went in, he's now, and I wrote one of his recommendations too, actually. He got full ride to the Academy of, what is it, Arts and Theater, Dramatic Theater and Arts in New York City.
Wow.
Right. That's from being in the program.
Yeah.
And having a place where he felt okay.
Yep.
And the biggest thing I teach the kids in my space, and I tell anybody this, I don't care what space they create, reiterate to the kids that that's the place to make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
If there's one thing they know about me that they hear from me over and over and over again, I tell them, "Hey, this is the place to make mistakes. There's no judgment in here. There's nothing. Let's make them together."
Yeah.
Whatever it is. So they don't have this fear of trying to be okay in their skin. All teens are going through it.
Yeah.
All of them. You know, and so I'm one of many. I created a niche space, but I'm more focused on all the youth in the city. That's any conversation I have with anybody. I don't be real. I don't really care about the adults. That's just where I'm at.
Yeah.
At this point, you know.
Well, man, I feel like we could have like 5, 6, 7 more conversations about all this stuff, and I look forward to getting to know you more and more.
Absolutely.
But I am curious, as we think about kind of wrapping the conversation up a little bit, how can people learn a little bit more about you? Obviously, we'll link you and link your website in the show notes and everything. But what's kind of on the docket for you moving forward in the next 7 months, I guess? It's, you know, not to date the podcast, but as we look towards from now to the end of the year, mm-hmm. what are some funding goals that you might have, people that can get ways that people can get involved with you and just support what it is you're doing?
Yeah. I'm gearing up for about a 2-week break. Cause that's all I get. I think I get about four, I'm being honest, like 4 weeks out of the year, maybe 5 total. We're getting ready. We do a summer program. So we stop May 14th. We start our summer program June 2nd. We run all June through July. I'm sure you'll put our website up, so I don't need to plug that. My main objective is being sustained, and I'm honest and real about that. I think Fort Collins, and I'm sincere calling Fort Collins out, has an obligation to make sure, whether I'm involved in this space or not, that something like the Culture Enrichment Center exists in the city. I don't, if it goes away, I don't think it will exist again. And that is my biggest fear. And being sustained is simple monthly subscribers. I mean, my goal when I started and I got away from it, and that's what I'm saying, moving so fast, starting a nonprofit, I got away from my focus. My focus was to get 1,000 subscribers. It seems like nothing, but 1,000 folks, and it really isn't. It's, you know, we have 180,000 people in the city. To get 1,000 people to give $10 a month would be exactly what we would need to be to have our entire overhead sustained per month. That allows a major possibilities and flexibility to really dig into programming that I know is beneficial to these kids. And I've only talked to you about some of the stuff that we do.
That's what I'm saying. There's a lot of
other things we run, and it's not just for kids. It's community things. We have a parent circle once a month that is focused on non-BIPOC parents or guardians who are raising BIPOC kids, what that looks like for them. We have another program we sort of work hand in hand with called Dandelions Program. That's all BIPOC youth and adults that come in once a month. We do different programming once a month. It varies on what it is, but every summer we combine a camp week, and we do it this year. We're doing it again at the Colorado, the university's outdoor campus.
Yeah, their mountain campus thing.
Mountain campus, yeah. Which is wonderful because some kids have never been out anywhere near anything like that. I'm watching kids who are scared of
heights, they got all go the up stuff the rock up walls. Yeah, the you rock know, it's walls, like, the ropes courses.
It is awesome, you know. I would say the biggest thing I've always tried to say is people always tell me, Jamal, this is wonderful. It's wonderful what you're doing. And I'm just straightforward. I'm like, well, I see other things sustained in this community. And I'm saying people spend more on, you know, a really fancy latte in the morning 3 days a week is probably three times what they could give to make sure that this place doesn't go anywhere, that it's not a fight or struggle to exist.
Yep.
It's a necessity in Fort Collins. And I'm, this is the last thing I'll say, probably the most honest thing I've said the whole time we've talked. If Fort Collins does not support it in that way, and I'm saying this whether I'm involved or not, if it does not, then Fort Collins is lying about who Fort Collins is.
Yeah.
And that's just the truth from the bottom of my heart.
No, totally. You can have, we talk about this all the time in my circles, like, it's one thing to have a stated value. It's a whole other thing to have an actual value. Mm-hmm. And actual values are proven by what gets put into, you know, your checkbook, your calendar book, your whatever it is. Otherwise, it's just, you just, anybody can state values, but got to make them actually real.
Yep.
It takes work.
Yeah.
Sacrifice. Yeah.
And I don't think that's a big one.
Right.
I don't. I don't think $1,000, I mean, $10 a month is anything.
Yeah.
And it can seem like people are going to say, oh, it seems like you, it's about money, but it is at the end of the day, because that's what makes things go. If you want to give it to Netflix, you go right ahead. Or you want to give it to Hulu and everyone else, that's fine. I get it. You know, but I'm saying at this point in 2026, that human capacity we have to really care. I'm not asking folks to come out and volunteer all the time or do whatever. I'm saying here's an easy way to trust that someone like myself and those young people know what to do with the finances and know what we're doing. And that's the piece I think Fort Collins has to come to the realization, an honest conversation with itself. Are we really moving in that direction in the city to say, hey, and I think from the partnerships that I have created from years of being here before even creating this has allowed for it to move the way it's been moving. I'm always open to any conversation with anyone around it or about it. That I will say, but I my hope is to not have myself or any of these young people who are already unsure and very distrusting of a lot of things in the city, and they have their reasons why, that they could trust that their space is something that people are making a commitment to.
Yep.
I know it.
Well, it's been a great conversation, man.
Absolutely.
I appreciate your honesty. Your directness is what people need. And man, it was great to have you share part of your story.
I appreciate you for having me.
I think it always fascinates me how God weaves our lives in all kinds of different directions, and we take things and they get added to our life and added to our heart and added to our mind. And, you know, I always believe I always believe in stories of redemption and reconciliation. It's definitely my story. But I also believe that we are, in a way, a product of all these different things that have been placed in our life from years before. And you've got some really good ones, some good people and some good things that have happened that have shaped you, and happy that you're able to share that with our city.
I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for the time. And man, I look forward to getting to know you more.
Absolutely.
All right.
Thanks for listening to the Love FOCO Show. If today's conversation inspired you, share it with a friend who loves Fort Collins as much as you do. Don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode, and leave us a review. It helps more people discover us. To learn more about Love FOCO and find opportunities for loving our city one life at a time, visit lovefoco.com. For now, keep loving Fort Collins well.